No, because it's so worth no.
Good morning, everybody. We will bring the November 15th, 2023 meeting of the Board of Directors of the Eastern Municipal Water District to order. Alan, step in here. We're going to have you lead the Pledge of Allegiance today since you have a major presentation. If you could, everyone could stand, please.
Ready, begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Board Secretary to read the suggestions for virtual participation in our meeting and then do a roll call of the board.
To avoid creating acoustic feedback, please mute all your devices during the meeting unless you are speaking. Before speaking, please unmute your device and turn down the volume of any other devices that are near you and tuned into the meeting. If you've joined by phone and would like to comment on an item, please press star 9 to let our staff know and wait to be notified. When it is your turn to speak, you will hear a notification asking you to unmute your phone by pressing star 6. If you have joined by computer, you may use the chat feature in Zoom to indicate your desire to speak. When done speaking, please mute your device again. And please participate from a quiet environment so that the board can hear you when you are speaking. Now we will do roll call. President Polly?
Present.
Director Crona?
Here.
Director Slauson?
Here.
Director Armstrong?
Here.
Our legal counsel is present. And just to note, Director Record is absent.
Thank you very much. April, do we have anybody indicating they'd like to do a public comment for any item not on the agenda today?
I do not have any requests.
Very good. We will move on to item 2 of our agenda. We have a couple of recognitions this morning. The first one is always one of my favorite, and that is our Youth Ecology Corp recognition. So, Alan, the floor is yours.
Thank you, President Polly and members of the board. It is a pleasure to acknowledge the completion of our 29th cohort of the Youth Ecology Corps intern program. 2023 marks the 10th anniversary for the Youth Ecology Corps intern program at EMWD. As of today, 237 young adults have completed the program. The program was created by giving real-world work experience to young adults entering the workforce and to teach them about the water industry careers. EMWD has been proud to be the leader in the workforce development, and this program has become one of our largest success stories. Today, we are recognizing 6 Youth Ecology Corps interns for the work they have done during this last 3-month program. The program is sponsored by the Riverside County Workforce Development Board and California Family Life Center in Hemet. I'd like to introduce representatives from California Family Life Center. They're here today. Executive Director Mary Jo Ramirez.
Thank you for being here.
Program Administrator Lenore De Jesus.
Thank you for being here.
Greg Snow.
Thank you, sir.
And Career Navigators Rafaela, Jose, and Amy. Well, she's not here. All right. So at this
thank
time,
you all.
Thank you. At this time, I would like to have President Polly and Joe Moa come on up here, and we're going to introduce the interns that have completed the program. First up is Deborah Guerrero. Deborah, come on up. So Deborah has been working as a recycled water assistant in a recycled water operations department. This is her first cohort here at EMWD. Deborah has been asked to return to do a second cohort starting in February in 2024. Congratulations. Thank you. All right, next up is Courtney Griffin. Courtney has been working as a planned of services assistant in our development services department. This is her first cohort here at EMWD, and she's also been asked to do a second cohort starting in February. Congratulations. All right, thank you. Next up is Antoinette Dubois. All right, Antoinette has been working as an engineering program assistant in our contracts department. Antoinette is finishing up her third cohort here at the, in the Youth Ecology Corps program, giving her 1 year of work experience. Congratulations. Thank you. Next up is Italia Sanchez. Italia has been working in two departments here as an intern, water resources and engineering. Italia is finishing up her third cohort in Youth Ecology Corps program, which will give her 1 year of work experience. Congratulations. Thank you. Next up is Diana Dove. Diana has been working as a records management assistant in the records management department. She is also finishing up her third cohort here in the program and giving her 1 year of work experience. Congratulations. Thank you. George Pachaco, last but not least. Come on up, George. Right. George has been working as a real property assistant in our engineering services department. He is also finishing up his third cohort in the Youth Ecology Corps program, giving him 1 year of work experience. Congratulations. All right. Thank you. In closing, I'd like to thank EMWD supervisors who are actively involved in the Youth Ecology Corps intern program. Without them, we couldn't do this program. EMWD's general manager, Joe Mawad, and of course, the entire board for your support in the Youth Ecology Corps program. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Alan. Appreciate it. With that, we're going to go to our next recognition, and that is our Supplier of the Year, and I'll ask Jeff Wasserman to come up.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. For the past 18 years, the district has recognized the Supplier of the Year that's gone above and beyond in providing goods and services to the district. Previous recipients include chemical suppliers, consulting firms, technology companies, and waterwork vendors. The selection process includes evaluating contract performance, frequency of service, and feedback from district staff. This year, we're recognizing Royal Industrial Solutions of Riverside, California, as our 2023 Supplier of the Year. Royal Industrial Solutions has been in business since 1985. They have over 600 locations throughout the U.S., and they provide goods and services covering process controls, network applications, power distribution equipment, and asset management solutions. Over the past year, they have completed several projects for the districts, including the De Anza Lift Motor Control Center Emergency Replacement and PLC upgrades and replacements at the Paris Water Filtration Plant and Temecula Valley Treatment Plant. But what really sets Royal apart from their competitors are their unique capabilities. They have in-house application and technology expertise that are able to lend itself to assisting district staff in times of need, and also their supply chain strength. They maintain key inventory for the district. They have lower lead times, and that translates to reduced material costs. Here's some feedback from staff regarding their performance. Royal has saved the district tens of thousands of dollars by warning us of upcoming manufacturer price increases, which has allowed us to get material at lower rates. and their sales team are professional, courteous, and always eager to help. At this time, I'd like to call up Robert Christensen, Tyler Brubaker, and Daniel Carter to accept the award. Thank you.
Please feel free to say a few words.
Yeah, at this time, I would just like to thank EMWD for all the support that you guys have given us over the years. I've personally worked with EMWD for about 20 years of my career at some capacity. And so, you know, we at Royal, we diligently try to find our success with our customers in their successes. And so it's always an honor to be recognized for those efforts. And so we just want to extend our thank you to you guys. So thank you, everybody.
All right. All right. Thank you for everyone for those recognitions. We are going to move on to our executive reports, and we will start with General Manager Mawad.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. My report is included in your packet under new and ongoing items. Over the past couple of days, President Pauly, Vice President Corona, myself, and Jolene Walsh, along with Pete Evich from Vanskoik & Associates, we had an opportunity to meet with a number of our stakeholders back in Washington, D.C. In fact, it was a fairly busy trip. Over the last 2 days, we met with Congressman Issa, Takano, Ruiz, and Calvert. And in addition, we also met with representatives from Senator Padilla's office. We also had the opportunity to meet with the Army Corps headquarters, discuss our Paris South desalinization program, as well as our proposed modification to the WARDA authorization to increase our appropriation on the project. In addition, we had the opportunity to advance and discuss a number of our regulatory and legislative priorities, including expressing our perspective on the proposed CERCLA legislation relative to PFAS and advocating for a potential carve-out or exemption for water agencies, since we are essentially passive receivers of the contaminant. We also had an opportunity to discuss our support for the LIWAP agreement that's being advanced by Senator Padilla. So all in all, it was a very productive and very busy, and I felt it was a very successful advocacy trip back in D.C., and I want to express my appreciation to President Pauly and Vice President Corona for taking the time out of their schedule to join us for that. The next item, I wanted to share with you that on November 6th, Governor Newsom signed a certification determining that the site's reservoir project can benefit from the recent Senate Bill 149 as far as CEQA streamlining. In fact, this is the first project that would benefit from the CEQA streamlining. And under the Senate Bill 149, essentially any CEQA-related challenges to certified projects must be addressed within 270 days. And this is an important test of the new streamlining process, and we are very glad to see that the governor did advance sites under the recently adopted provisions. So we very much support the project, we support advancing the project, and we strongly believe that the sites project is going to help address some of the state's water supply challenges ahead of us. Next, I wanted to share with the board that we recently met with representatives from the Riverside University Health Systems, along with representatives from the county. As you may recall, in the past, there was a proposal to construct a wellness village in Hemet recently that has changed, and now the facility will be located in Mead Valley on county-owned property. It's a very significant facility. It's, in fact, a $400 million investment by RUHS and the county. And the meeting that we recently held on November 1st We wanted to see how we can support the project, how we can help accommodate their water and sewer needs. And our initial review of their demands is that we can definitely accommodate the water needs. We are still reviewing the sewer generation numbers and looking at our system to see if there's any capacity flow limitations that we would have to address for regional demands. But overall, we feel that we can assist our UHS and the county to help them advance the project. They have a very aggressive timeline, given the state funding that they have secured. They would like to see the facility under construction mid-next year with completion by the end of 2026. So more to come, but I just want to alert you that this is a fairly significant project that will be taking place in Mead Valley.
But we feel confident that eventually we'll get to the sewer needs.
Yes. Okay. Yes. There may be some segments of our sewer system that have to be upsized to accommodate them. We have not determined that yet. We will be doing flow monitoring. But to your point, President Pauly, we will accommodate them. It's just a matter of what it's going to take between now and the time they become operational. Finally, under items of interest of the board, just wanted to let you know that EMWD was recently honored by the Public Relations Society of America's Inland Empire chapter. And this is a fairly significant recognition of our public governmental affairs efforts. And we received not one, but three awards at the recent annual ceremony that was held on November 2nd. The first award we received was the Polaris Award, the highest honor in that category, for the Drop podcast that I think you're all familiar with, that Amanda Fine took the lead on. We also received the Capella Award for our 2022 year in review documents, and also another Capella Award for the Safety First Week campaign. So I just want to give a shout-out to our PGA staff, and congratulations to them and to the entire district. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions the board may have.
Questions? Director Armstrong.
Yeah, I just also give a shout-out, too, to the PGA staff. That's great. Appreciate you and our fellow board members and the team that went back to D.C. and what you guys did. I'm glad it was a good trip. I know it's a lot of work, and just appreciate that. On the site's reservoir, I think still it would be in our interest at Eastern to pursue being on the wait list. Don't know, you know, who's going to stay on and who's going to fall off, but I know it doesn't commit us, but I think it would be wise to get our spot on the wait list, and I don't know what we're doing on that front. But
no, and to that point, Dr. Armstrong, very recently we did submit a application, and we have been added to the wait list. I'm happy to share with you that as of today, EMWD is on the wait list. So if there is capacity that becomes available, currently there is not, it's fully subscribed, then we will be offered an opportunity to fully participate. And, of course, we'll have to negotiate the terms and conditions at that point. We'll come back to the board at that point. Right. But as of today, we are on the wait list.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Any other questions for the general manager? All right. Thank you, Mr. Mawad. Laura, do you have anything for us this morning?
A couple items. As the board is aware, in 2021, Fitch Ratings upgraded us to a AAA rating due to our successful refunding of the general obligation bonds. And they recently reached out to us for their annual surveillance. Staff met with Fitch and provided financial and operational data, including a five-year projection, our CIP, budget rates, our recent cost of service study. And last week we heard back from them, and I'm happy to share that with the ratings committee assigned us what they call a review no action designation, which means they will maintain our AAA rating with a stable outlook on our outstanding bonds. And as standard practice, Fitch does not issue a press release on these types of actions. And I just want to say thank you to our finance team, Thomas and John and the team, and as well as our consultants and all the departments that helped out, because there were a lot of operational questions, regulatory stuff. And everybody pitched in to help redeem our rating. And then secondly, it was just ratings time. Moody's Investor Services reached out to us last week, and they shared that they are updating their environmental, social, and governance methodology, which introduces an ESG profile and credit impact score for rated agencies. And with that, Moody's plans to publish these scores for its rated agencies throughout the country in the coming months. EMWD, we reflect a neutral to low ESG credit impact in line with other California water and wastewater agencies. So they wanted to share that with us. The meeting was great. We were able to ask some questions. The finance team will be following up with remarks to their report. And also we'll be utilizing the positive information from our recently published 2023 Strategic Priorities Progress Report to share with them all the great things that we're doing here at EMWD as it relates to environmental and compliance issues. So, and also we will be bringing to the board in January our plan of finance for 2024, and we'll give a little bit of update of what Moody shared with us in that report. So that's my report for today.
All right. Any questions for Laura? Very good. Nick, anything for us this morning?
Well, I have nothing today.
Very good. Matt?
Good morning, President Pauley, members of the board. Just as we get closer to the end of the year, another quick update on recharge. We did have to shut down for the last 2 weeks to accommodate construction on the EM25 turnout. But we are back online and running, so it does look like we will be able to complete 2024 pre-deliveries by the end of this month. And in the next few weeks, it should become a little more clear if MET's going to allow recharge activities to continue in through January, or if we're going to take a pause and see how the winter goes. But we do have about 1,500 acre feet left. Should take, you know, between 20 and 25 days to finish that for 2024 Suboba delivery.
Very good. Thank you so much. That will take us to item four this morning, which is our consent calendar. Do any members of the board want to have a separate vote or conflict on the items on the consent calendar? Seeing none, I'll make a motion by Director Cronus, second by Director Armstrong. May I get a roll call vote on the consent calendar, please?
President Pauley?
Aye.
Director Crona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes 4-0 with Director Record absent. That will take us to item 5 this morning, which is our action calendar. Item 5A is to adopt an ordinance approving financial participation charges and fees for service for calendar year 2024, amending the administrative code as it relates to incorporating certain adjustments to the consolidated schedules of rates, fees, and charges. Good morning, Donna.
Good morning, President Pauley and members of the board. Today's item relates to the annual updates of financial participation charges, or FPCs, and fees for service, and amending the administrative code with these updates. This is the first time we have brought the FPCs and fees for service together for an annual update, and this will be our approach going forward. FPCs, also known as connection fees, are collected from new development to pay for planned and existing facilities, and to ensure that everyone pays a fair share of the district's infrastructure. Fees for service are charged to equitably cover the district's costs for a variety of discrete services, which avoids those costs being subsidized by existing ratepayers. FPCs were last studied by the board and adopted in December of 2021. Fees for service were last studied and adopted by the board in April of 2023. As part of those studies, the board also authorized the continuance of annual adjustments based on the change in the Engineering News Record, or ENR, construction cost index for FPCs, and based on the Consumer Price Index, or CPI, for fees for service. Staff's recommendation is for a 2.5% increase to connection fees based on the year-over-year change in the ENR construction cost index from October 22 to October 23. Over the past year, the change in ENR peaked at 5.7% in November of 22, and after trending downward, has remained fairly constant for the last several months. This 2.5% ENR increase will also apply to the recycled water supply development fee and the front footage fee for developer reimbursements. Staff is also recommending a 5.3% increase to fees for service based on the Riverside San Bernardino, Ontario CPI rolling average from September 22 to September of 23. Over the past year, the CPI peaked at 7.5%, also in November of 22. This CPI index is the same factor used for COLAs and allows us to align our fees to our costs for providing the services, since a large percentage of the costs is staff-related. As a standard practice, the district provided a 30-day notice of the proposed increase to the Riverside chapter of the Building Industry Association. Laura Nomura, our deputy general manager, had a discussion of the proposed increases with Lou Monville of the Riverside BIA, who did not express any concerns. Once approved, the increases would go into effect January 1 of 2024. Development services will reach out to applicants and developers with an active service application that have connection fees assessed but not yet paid to inform them of the new rates and offer them the ability to pay the current 2023 rates within a designated period of up to 30 days. Exhibit A is the ordinance for updating these fees. Previously, the district has adopted these increases by resolution, but based on guidance from legal counsel, the district will adopt all changes in rates and fees by ordinance, updating only the fees identified in the exhibit. Exhibit B highlights these changes made for the FPCs and fees for service. It is staff's recommendation for the board to adopt the proposed ordinance amending the EMWD Administrative Code and to update the consolidated schedules of rates, fees, and charges as outlined. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? None. I will look for a motion by Director Armstrong. Would you like to second Director Slauson? Second by Director Slauson. I'll take a roll call vote, please.
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Cronin?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes 4-0 with Director Record absent. Thank you for a fine report. Forgot to mention that. My apologies. That will take us to item B this morning, which is to adopt proposed resolution of issuance of the Board of Directors of the Eastern Municipal Water District acting as the legislative body for the Community Facilities District number 2019-86, Tierra del Sol, authorizing issuance of its 2023 special tax bonds and approving bond documents. Thomas.
Morning, President Pauly, members of the board. This action pertains to a bond issuance for CFD number 2019-86, Tierra del Sol. The CFD was formed in 2021 with a bonded indebtedness amount not to exceed $8 million for the purpose of financing district water and sewer improvements and improvements for the local school district where the CFD is located, Temecula Valley Unified. CFD is located in President Pauly's division in the Winchester-French Valley area, approximately 2 miles west of Lake Skinner. The park located at the top of the map is Sheffield Park. In 2018, President Pauly and others from the district, along with representatives from Valleywide, held a French Valley recycled water pipeline event and celebrated the success of installing a new bathroom at this park, as well as converting several parks in the area to recycled water.
It's like a little side ad, right?
What's that?
Little side advertisements for all the work we've done.
Yes, I was just excited at the celebration of a bathroom. You know, it's very underappreciated.
Very appreciate you to insert that in your presentation.
Whenever I fix a toilet at my house, I'm celebrated beyond belief. It's a miracle.
We all celebrate it.
The developer of this project is Meritage Homes, and the project contains approximately 15 gross acres and is planned for 139 single-family homes. An appraisal was performed by Stephen G. White, one of the district's approved appraisers. With a value date of September 22nd, the appraised value was close to $53 million. Since the appraisal date, there's been additional completed and sold homes. As of November 1st, 56% of the homes had been conveyed to homeowners. 19 homes remain under construction, with the majority of them in escrow, and 40 vacant lots remain. The bond sale meets or exceeds all of the district's debt policy requirements. As noted on this slide, the appraised value results in a healthy value-to-lien ratio of 10 to 1. 81 parcels were levied this year, and property taxes are due next month. So it's too soon for delinquency information. The balance of the homes will be added to the levy next year, and the effective tax rate is estimated to be 1.73%. This will be the first and last new money bond issuance for the CFD. That is, future bond issuances would be for refunding purposes only. Now, the financing team has been closely watching the market, and I'm happy to report that market conditions have since improved since the preparation of the bottom table. We are anticipating a lower TIC at 5.3%, and the par amount has been increased and is now projected to be $5.5 million, generating $4.8 million in proceeds. That's information as of yesterday. Now, it's been a little while since we've issued CFD bonds. Just want to reassure the board, now that we see, you know, rates ticking in the mid 5% range, want to reassure the board that the TIC for this does not increase the special taxes for the homeowners. The special taxes for the homeowners are regulated or constrained by the rate and method of apportionment, which is disclosed to them through the home buying process, property tax disclosures. So an increase in the TIC really just impacts the project fund and how much can be funded, which will impact how much the developer has to pay or can finance through this. Now, we've worked closely with the developer, and they have assured us they want to move forward with the sale, even knowing that they may get a little bit less in proceeds than they would when rates are lower. It's our understanding that cash today is worth more to them than waiting and trying to time the market. Many members of the financing team have joined us here today. Want to just take a moment and recognize who's here and also express my appreciation. Standing behind me, we have Anna Sarabian from Fieldman, the district's municipal advisor. We also have Heidi Sheppy from Webb, the district's special tax consultant.
Thank you, Heidi, for being here.
We also have Renee Vancho from Piper Sandler, the underwriter selected for this bond sale.
Thank you for being here.
And we also have Tracy Lee, finance manager here at Eastern.
All right. Thank you, Tracy.
Really appreciate the team's effort for their commitment and support of district staff and the CFD. As for the schedule goes, this week we successfully wrapped up the due diligence meeting with the underwriter, the developer, and legal counsels for both parties. Today we are seeking board approval. The POS is expected to post tomorrow. And based on the recommendation from Piper Sandler, we will be pricing the bonds a day earlier, November 28th, and closing on December 12th. Staff recommends the board adopt the proposed resolution, authorizing the issuance of the bonds in a principal amount not to exceed $8 million, approve the related documents, and authorize the district's executive staff to provide the necessary services for the issuance of the bonds. That wraps up my presentation, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for my PR person?
I have one question. Sure, I just kind of follow up from our conversation at the admin committee about the investors in these bonds and what they would look like for this type of bond. Do you have would be institutional investors primarily, or?
Yeah, we have Renee Vancho here. Renee, you want to? Yeah, we spoke about it. And just to touch on that, Director Armstrong, we will be looking into having the opportunity for customers, ratepayers, residents within our area to purchase the bonds. As the board's aware, the state of California does a great job marketing their bonds and making them available to individual retail investors. I'll have Renee talk about the plan for this bond sale and what their marketing plans are.
Okay.
Maybe too soon to get something at the local level for Piper, but it's something we'll be looking into in the future, and not only for CFD bonds, but also for just general district bonds, as those are a much higher size.
Yeah.
Good morning, and thank you for having me today. This is a very specific type of credit, obviously, because it's non-rated. It is in a community that's currently being developed, so we target those high-yield funds. So there will be institutional investors. There'll be SMAs. We target SMAs a lot for this type of type of credit, and we'll be having that conversation over the next couple days with our underwriter as far as retail customers as well. For this type of credit, we also see developer clients come in. They understand the credit, obviously, and so a lot of times, and especially in this market that we're in right now, we'll get an order or two from developers as well because they understand the type of credit. Okay. So I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it, and I appreciate the expanded effort too. I just think it's be nice to see some of our own customers, you know, having an opportunity to invest in their community.
We agree. And something else we're going to explore is local agencies, water district cities that we work with, we collaborate with, having the opportunity for them also to purchase Eastern bonds. And something we'll also be looking at on our investment side is reciprocating that same collaboration and purchasing local agency bonds and investing in the local communities.
Thank you. Director Slauson.
Just out of curiosity, looking at the density, I guess, you said so many acres, 139 lots, but how many acres?
15 acres, yeah, 15 gross acres. So as you could, well, I guess it's kind of hard to see on this map, but the lot sizes are fairly limited. They are smaller. If you see the map on or the picture on this map, the surrounding areas have already been developed, and so this is really like a cookie cutter lot where the developer either owned or purchased and then planned the development for these homes. Now, you know, I don't understand, but I guess I could recognize as a developer, they want to maximize the number of lots, be able to sell as many homes as possible. Eastern's policies for CFD, we need them over 100 lots. And so however the magic formula, you know, was developed, 139 is what this development is planned for.
Okay, so, yeah, it just looked to me like they changed the density. They increased the density for this phase. So.
It appears that way, yes.
All right. No, it looks good. Thank you.
All right. I'll look for a motion by Director Slauson.
One second.
Would you like to second by Director Corona? May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauley?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
And that passes 4-0. Director Record absent. Thank you for our finance team for being here this morning. Always appreciative. We will go to item C, which is to approve and authorize 4 agreements for on-call hydrological consulting services in the full term not to exceed $900,000. Mr. Wasserman, you stuck around so you could present this item.
Okay. Thank you, President Pauley.
Yes.
So by way of background, in January 2023, the board approved and authorized 14 as-needed service agreements among 4 specific disciplines of hydrogeological services. Work in these areas, less than $100,000, is issued against these agreements and also served to provide a pre-qualified list of firms to request for proposals for new and existing projects. Following approval of the 14 as-needed agreements, the Water Resources and Facilities Planning Department identified 2 previously awarded hydrogeological support services agreements due to expire. These contracts with Water Systems Consulting and Jacobs Engineering Group include on-site support and project management services covering a number of ongoing groundwater development projects. These agreements were approved by the Board of Directors in June of 2020 and were later extended to December 31st of this year. Staff issued a solicitation for on-site hydrogeological and project management consulting services due to the upcoming contract expiration, and it was sent to these firms that are currently on the as-needed services pre-qualified list with 4 proposals received in late August. The proposals were evaluated by a cross-functional team of district staff based on a common set of criteria. Services in this category will include extensive range of on-site hydrogeological service support services and technical expertise needed to support EMWD's groundwater development projects and programs. Following evaluation, staff proposes an agreement be issued to each of the 4 firms who submitted proposals, as each one possesses skills that may be used to complete specific types of work. It's recommended that the proposed agreements be awarded for a 14-month term, making them coterminous with the aforementioned agreements for as-needed hydrogeological services. Future solicitations for these service of categories will be combined and awarded under a single request. So at this time, our recommendation is for the board to approve and authorize the award of four agreements for on-call hydrogeological consulting services in the combined full term, not to exceed total of $900,000. With that, I'd be happy to try and answer any questions you have at this time. Any
questions on this? None. I'll look for a motion by Director Slauson, second by Director Corona. Roll call vote, please.
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes 4-0. Director Record absent. Thank you, Mr. Wasserman, for your service today. With that, that concludes our action calendar. We will go on to item 6, which is informational items. Mr. Mawad?
Thank you, President Pauly. We have online with us Jolene Walsh as well as Dr. Kurt Schwabe, who will be presenting this next item. I was going to ask Jolene to introduce Dr. Schwabe.
Great. Thank you, Joe. Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. Dr. Kurt Schwabe has been a partner with EMWD for many years, but just as a refresher, he's a professor of environmental economics and policy at UC Riverside. And as you probably recall from his past work with us, he's brilliant in water policy and economics, and we've been fortunate to work with him on a number of studies in the past, most recently a study on water affordability. Today, Dr. Schwabe is joining us from a sabbatical in Spain to share some of his latest work that he's doing regarding non-functional turf and kind of laying the foundation for a potential project that EMWD has in mind. So with that, Kurt, you there?
Yes, I am, Jolene. Can you hear me okay?
Absolutely.
Yes,
morning,
loud
sir.
And clear.
Good morning, President Pauly, board directors, General Manager Mawad, Jolene, and EMWD staff. It's an honor to be able to present some of the recent findings in our research. It's moving along pretty well. What I'd like to do is present kind of an update of where we're at on this project. Welcome feedback, either now or if you think about things later on, both the staff and the board. I appreciate any feedback on it. We always learn when we interact with you all. I also want to just recognize your staff, and in particular, Gordon Ng and Sarah Quintero, who've been helping us. They're just extremely professional, efficient. I wish we could clone all your staff. I wish I could win the lottery and bring them all to Spain with me on the sabbatical. That might not happen. But anyways, I just want to thank you all for supporting the research. This is co-authored work with Dr. Mehdi Namati, a colleague of mine who's an assistant professor of water economics and policy. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yes, absolutely.
Great. Okay. Well, with that said then, let me move in. So the goal of this project is to understand the water and cost savings to your district from them participating in the non-functional turf rebate removal program. And in particular for the CII customers who have participated in that, compare the program benefits and program costs associated with participating in the program, and then using what we learned from that to see what the possible future district-wide water-saving benefits are from expanding the program. Next slide, please. So we can think of this as in two stages. One is analysis of kind of the current program and the participants, and that's objective one and two. And the second is taking what we learned from looking at how your CI customers have behaved and spreading that out, generalizing it to all the customers in your district who haven't necessarily participated in the program. So first objective was using meter level data to evaluate the water use reductions and cost savings from prior turf removal rebate programs from the customers that participated. That's essentially completed, although we're ready to update and perform some more sensitive analysis based on discussions today. With that, the next would be identify water and cost savings by irrigated area size and outdoor summertime water use for similar CII types, so commercial, industrial, institutional. that's pretty much complete, but we want to make some updates based on the feedback that we get from you and your staff today as well, as well as when we submit a draft report. And then use that to move forward on identifying the efficient and cost-effective program targets across your customers for this program, as well as district-level cost savings and potential. And that's in progress right now. Next slide. To give me kind of an idea of what our data looks like that we received from your staff, here's landscape area in terms of square feet by account type and year. So from 2011 to 2020, we're focusing for this study right now, we're just focusing on your CII customers who have landscape accounts. So that's not all your CII customers, but also use domestic, not recycled water. Okay. And so this is different than CII customers that use recycled water or that don't have individual landscape meters or counts. And this isn't agricultural reclaimed. But focusing on this group, we can see that there's certainly some benefits in terms of potential water savings. There's around 3,000 customers in this group. The average customer has around 59,000 square feet, which is about 1.35 acres. And the total square feet of landscape, not necessarily what they've enrolled in the program, but of landscape of these customers is around 166 million square feet, which is around 3,800 acres. So we have data on monthly water usage over that 2011 to 2020, monthly water bills. We also have who among them have participated in the program, when they participated in the rebate amounts that they received. Next slide, please. To give you an idea of where these customers are. So the white dots, here's an outline of your district boundary. The white dots are the customers in our data set, all the customers, the 3,000 approximately. And the red dots are the customers that actually participated in the non-functional turf rebate program. Next slide. Here's a nice to give you an idea of what the water use is for your CII customers, and particularly the ones that are in our data set. So the left graph there is the average consumption for a customer, a CII customer in our data set in terms of acre feet per month. So it varies between around a little less than 2 acre feet per month up to nearly 0.8, depending on the seasonality. And from 2012 to 2020, what you see is the importance of seasonality, but you also see a couple other issues here or facts. You see that commercial institutional customers pretty much mirror each other in terms of the average customer's water usage per month. You see this downward trend as well happening. And if you think about that downward trend from 12 to 2020, on the right-hand side of this graph, that red-pink area there, what we've done is we estimated the average water savings relative to 2013. So on average, water reduction by this group has gone down by 33%, is statistically significant, since 2013. And all those numbers there, 2014 to 20, is the water reduction relative to 2013. So that's good news. Next slide. Here's a slide that shows the differences in landscape and how water is used by differences in landscape amount. So what we did was we took the data in the customers in our data set, remember about 3,000, and we put them into quantiles, the lowest quantile, the second quantile, the third quantile, and then the upper quantile in terms of landscape size. This isn't turf size, it's entire landscape, which is both functional and non-functional landscaping. And we estimated the average water consumption in terms of acre feet per month from 2011 to 2020. And what you see here, as you kind of expect, is that those with larger landscapes, they're going to use more water per month. But what's kind of a little bit maybe surprising is the degree to which that the customers in the highest quartile of landscape, well, these are the people with a lot of acreage, are using a lot more water per month than what you would see kind of in the gradual increase from the first, the second, and the third quantile. There's just a huge increase to the fourth quantile. Now, this is particularly important if you think about who participates in this rebate program. So down below is this table, and what it does is it shows you the square footage of all the customers, CI customers in our data set, broken up by commercial and institutional. There were only, I think, two one or two industrial customers. So we've dropped that group from our data set because it's just one or two. And then we have the landscape of those that participate in the rebate program. And so when you look from left to right, you see that on average, the customer has about 67,000 square feet, which is about 1.55 acreage. Institution is a little bit more than commercial. But when you look at the rebate participants, you see a surprisingly larger increase in landscape there. So to some extent, almost double what the average customer has. So in some respects, these are the customers that you'd want to first participate in the program because they're likely to get the largest cost savings. The little kind of the squirrely issue here, though, is that we want to make sure that when we come up with our estimates that we can generalize these to the population of CI customers. So this group is significantly larger in terms of their landscape, and so we want to make sure when we come up with our estimates that we're comparing apples to apples versus apples to oranges. Next slide. We also wanted to think about what is the share of the landscape that they got replaced. So again, we have information on their total landscape, and we have how much they actually replaced in terms of non-functional turf. And so what we see is that as a percentage of overall landscaping, on average, customers replaced about 20% of their landscape, entered it in the program to replace the turf into some other type of landscaping. And so we see it varies from something slightly above zero to all the way up to about 80%. So we can imagine that the 80%, the customer that's about 80%, this is a distribution here. Number of customers is on the vertical axis and the share of landscape area placed is on the horizontal axis. But that far right customer, probably the entire landscape was probably turf, and that's why they could replace most of it. But we don't really know what's going on with the rest of their landscape. All we know is the total landscape and how much they replaced and entered in the program. Okay, next slide. So to give you an idea of the water use by the rebate program participants versus on average, here's a graph of acre feet per month of water use for the average customer by class. The bottom three lines are for all the customers in our data set. By all CII, all commercial is the gray, the yellow is all institutional, and to some extent they mirror one another. There's not much of a difference between 2014 and 2020 across those categories, the average, commercial, or whether you're institutional. You certainly see a jump when you look at just the customers that participated in the rebate program. So rather than hovering a little under 4 acre feet per month, the average customer in the program hovers around 0.8 acre feet per month. And you see this kind of general decline from 2014 to 2020. That's capturing the fact that they're entering the program over that period of time. Next slide, please. So what does the implementation and the participation look like over time? So here's just a table from 2014 to 2020 looking at the number of customers that decided to enter the program. So in 2014, there were 7 customers with an average replacement around 23,000 square feet. In 2020, there were 7 customers with an average replacement around 42,000 square feet. The third column shows you the total replacement. It's the cumulative at the bottom, around 2.5 million, million square feet. Keep in mind that this is just the participants in our data set. So my understanding, talking with your staff, is you've replaced in all of the district area around 9.2 million square feet. About 6.2 is from CI customers, and around 3 million square feet is from residential. The second to last column is the average rebate amount that the average customer received, and then the total rebate amount that's been spent. So in total from 2014 to 2020, and for the customers in our data set, around $4 million has been spent on the program in terms of rebates. Next slide. One of the interesting issues is the time it takes between when a customer gets approved for the program and when they get their rebate check. And so what we did was we looked at that difference because we can't necessarily include that in our analysis because we don't know what they're doing during that time period. So what we do is we analyze water use before they enter the program and then when they completed the program. And what we found is that the time to get approved, time from entering the program and being approved, varies anywhere from 3.5 months up to 45 months. And there's only one customer that's way up in that far right end of the distribution. The median time is around 16, 17 months to go from getting approved to getting your rebate check. Now, this isn't there's no kind of hidden message here about the program and how efficiently it's run. What it likely is customers potentially just taking their time in moving through from after they get approved to when they get the rebate check. But there might be some additional ideas here or value in terms of looking into this a little bit more in terms of maybe understanding why this time difference exists. It could maybe increase adoption or implementation participation in the program. Seeing what kind of pressure points customers are confronting after they enter the program. Next slide, please. Okay, so before I discuss some of the statistics and our results then, I just want to touch very briefly about how we estimated the effectiveness of the program. And so you can imagine that there are a lot of factors going on right now. There are differences in prices, there's the drought, there's changes in weather, there's changes in precipitation. And so what we want to do is we want to tease out all those other factors and just isolate the effect of participating in the program. And so what we use an econometric procedure called difference in difference. And kind of maybe a simple way just to think about this is that suppose you have two customer types. One's represented by the blue line and one's represented by the red line. And the blue line are the customers that end up participating at some point and measured by the dotted line at some time. The red customers don't participate in the program. As you see, their water use is changing. Both their water uses are changing before the program, and they continue to change after the program. And so that's the difference there. But you also see, for those customers that participate in the program, there's an additional change. There's that level effect. So that's the difference in the difference. And so we can isolate the effect of the program by controlling for all these other factors that are changing. So if you move to the right side or left side of the screen, then you see kind of our approach. Identify customers who participated. We identify neighbors, and neighbors is kind of a broad term of customers that look similar in terms of landscape size and water usage. Measure the change in water use for both non-participants and participants, controlling for other factors, and then calculate those differences. Next slide. So here's our first statistical table. So basically what we're looking at is for those customers that participated in the program, what was the average reduction in water use, if any, from participating in the program? And so that red circle there, that tells you that on average, those customers that participate in the program noticed a reduction in 3 gallons per square foot of turf replaced. And it's strongly statistically significant there. For those customers that, if you just look at the summertime water usage, you see that they saved 3 gallons per square foot removed. I'm not talking about the aggregate numbers yet. I'll move on to that in just a second. But we also have, you know, other bill changed per square foot. Now, keep in mind they're replacing, you know, 60,000 square feet. So we'll move on to the aggregate numbers. But just to show you that for, on average, around 3 gallons saved per square foot enrolled in the program, for the summertime, it's around 3.3 gallons saved per square foot. Next slide. Next slide, please. Sorry. So a lot of numbers here, so let me go through this kind of slowly here. So water and water expenditure savings for the average participant. So the first cell there, the 3.19, so that's the 3 gallons they saved by participating in the program. The average customer removed around 18,000 square feet. That's the next number. So when you think about the average water savings acre feet per year, each customer on average saves about 2 acre feet per year. Now, the rebate program is an investment by Eastern, and it produces a stream of benefits over the life of the good. And the good is the new landscape water use relative to the old landscape water use. So we can do some sensitivity analysis here. I'm just going to keep it simple and say, suppose we say that that new landscape, the water savings associated with it, lasts for around 20 years. So in that sense, if you think about that's 20 years times 2.1 annual savings per year gives you about 42 acre feet of water, 43 acre feet. The average customer saves over the lifetime of that change. Now, if you just look at the annual savings for the entire program, not over the lifetime of of that change, but just the annual savings, water savings for the program right now, they have 102 customers or 99 customers that are participating. It's around 200, a little over 200 acre feet per year. Now, how does that change in terms of, you think about the implicit price of water? So Eastern's making an investment, or Metropolitan's making an investment in terms of providing a rebate. They're getting so much water for that investment. What's the implicit price of that water? So to estimate that, we said, well, let's think about how that price changes depending on how much of a rebate you decide to offer. So we look at if you offer $1, $2, $3, $4, the average level rebate based on that for the average customer. So we think that, well, the average customer uses 18,000 square feet. So the rebate would be for $1, $18,000, and then so on for $2, $3, and $4. We think about the water saved over the 20 years. It's around 42 acre feet for an average customer over the 20 years. If you assume a 25-year life cycle rather than a 20-year, the water savings over the lifetime is around 53 acres rather than 43. So here's, I think, where the fun part is. If you think about the implicit price of water, how much are you paying for that water, in a sense, Eastern? Well, it's the total rebate amount divided by the lifetime water savings. And so for $1 rebate, the implicit price of water is $435 per acre foot. For a $2 rebate, it's $870, and up to $4 rebate, it's around $1,700. Now, obviously, if you get more water savings out of that product going from 20 to 25 years, the implicit price of water decreases because your denominator, lifetime water savings, is going up. I think this is a really important, those two columns are important, and the sensitivity analysis is important as well in terms of seeing how that investment is compares to maybe what you can generate water for through other types of purchases or strategies. Next slide. So we do this for the average customer, but then we say, what about a customer that looks at only replaces 20% of, less than 20% of the landscape? Actually, I realized through somehow I seem to have skipped the slide. Can you go back two slides, please, Sheila? I apologize. And one more. Oh, okay, this is the slide. So we also wanted to look at, thank you very much. Oh, next slide. There we go. So we also wanted to say, if a customer replaced less than 20% of the landscape, what's the water savings versus if a customer replaced more than 20%? And you might be thinking, are there economies of scale here? So yes, but in a way, maybe you didn't think about it, or we didn't think about it first. We thought that, well, if you replaced, say, 10 acres, maybe your water savings per square foot is this amount, versus if you replaced 20 acres, your water savings is maybe less due to economies of scale. We don't find that nonlinearity. Where we do find it is in terms of the percent you replace. So for customers that replaced under 20% of the landscape, they only save 2.4 gallons per square foot removed. For customers that replaced more than 20% of the landscape, they saved almost $4 per gallon square foot removed. Now, this makes sense, and one that thank Jolene originally for pointing this out, is that for customers that replace a larger share of the landscape, it's likely they retooled everything and engaged in a much more efficient irrigation, et cetera, versus those that replaced just a small share. Maybe they didn't change the irrigation system much, or a much smaller fraction, and that's probably likely leading to those differences. Thanks, Sheila. Let's move on to the next slide, and then the next slide after that. Yeah. So what we did here is we calculated the implicit price of water under those different scenarios, kind of the average. If your share is less than 20%, if your share was greater than 20%, and then the top numbers are for a 20-year life expectancy, the bottom numbers are for a 25-year life expectancy. And so just to kind of cut to the chase, if you look at the last column there, first for share greater than 20%, the implicit price of water for a $1 rebate is $346. If it's a 25-year life expectancy, the implicit price of water is $277 per acre foot. If you go up to a $4 rebate, for a 20-year life expectancy, it's $1,300, and for a 25-year life expectancy, it's $1,100. So I'll make sure all these slides are available to you, but in the interest of time, I'll move on to my last slide, numbers, and then kind of wrapping this up. So next slide, please. Okay, so how does this affect the customer, in a sense? So let's look at Part B here, the cost savings for program participants. There's a lot of numbers here, but I think the fact that I really the number I really want to focus on is column C of the bottom table. So this is the percent savings in the water bill from participating in the program. So the first column in column B there is the baseline is the average customer saves around $3,000 per year in their water bill. That's for the average customer around 18% of their water bill. For those customers that only replace less than 20% of their landscape, the average bill savings is around $1,500 per year or 8% of their water bill. But for those that replace 20% or more of their landscape, the average bill savings is around $5,400 or nearly 50% of the water bill is reduced. So those that last number is obviously pretty striking. And then what we do is we show what the unsubsidized cost of conversion. So what would it cost the customer to convert their landscape, the total cost? If the cost of conversion was $6,000 without any subsidy from Met or Eastern, and then the column E is how does that cost of conversion that the customer is confronting change if you provide a $4 subsidy? So the customer would only receive, have to pay essentially $2 for that cost of conversion when you account for the $4 subsidy, which I think is what the subsidy rate is at now, combining Mets and Eastern's in 2023. So let me just wrap it up and then open it up for some Q&A. So last slide. So analysis to date, what we want to do is incorporate your feedback, what you've seen today, what you see on the slides from the board and staff. Consider parameter adjustments and sensitivity analysis based on your input, expert opinion, industry standards, and then revise that analysis. Then use those parameters, which then we'll all agree on, and apply them to the district as a whole and see what are the potential water savings for the district as a whole, the cost savings both for Eastern and for customers in different classes, forms of sensitivity analysis, and then present those findings again. And then after that, explore with your staff and management how these results and models can identify opportunities and situations that would justify expansion of the program, the characteristics of the expansion, along with the impacts of water use to both your customers and to the district. So why don't I stop there? Sorry if I went a little overboard and for all the numbers, but if you have questions, I welcome any questions and comments and feedback. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor Schwabe. Really appreciate that. And I just wanted to express my gratitude to Professor Schwabe and Professor Nemte as well for all this amazing work that they've conducted over the past year. You know, this is, for me, this is kind of foundational in trying to understand what are the water savings realized from our non-functional turf removal program. But beyond the water savings, how does that translate to potential savings on the customers' water bills? And from there, as Professor Schwabe indicated, there's potentially an opportunity for us to start thinking about how can we enhance these types of programs, knowing that there are financial savings to the customer, and knowing that sometimes they're challenged with the upfront cost of putting in drought-tolerant landscaping. So I think this is great information. This helps us quantify all those questions we've long had and provide us with some guidance. And I'm very excited that we're going to be able to build upon this and truly then come back and see if there's an opportunity to further streamline and incentivize our customers to continue removing non-functional turf. So I just wanted to thank Professor Schwabe. And, of course, we want to welcome any feedback, comment, and guidance from our board as well.
Start with Director Armstrong.
Okay. Well, I want to say thank you very much. This is really great information, and it's a lot to digest just watching and listening. So I look forward to a chance to go through it. But I think it does kind of really help answer the question, you know, of what is the cost for conservation in this way versus the cost of finding new supply. And it shows that in some cases it really is a lower cost to remove some turf and save and conserve and be more efficient than there is to go out and find new supply. So I think this is really helping answer that question. It also just initial reaction, it also to me looks like, well, maybe we even need like tiered rebates. I mean, what level of rebate does it take to incentivize some of these larger square foot lots to actually participate in a program? Because it looks like if you could even give more, and the cost per acre foot would still be less than some of the smaller lots that we do it for. I don't know. It just looks like it gives you a lot of information to kind of look at new ways to structure and get more participation, and also at a level that's less than investing in some new supply. So I don't know what you're going to do with this information, but it's really, really good stuff, and so I appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Dr. Armstrong. And I'm sure Kurt can comment further, but what was really striking for us is once we were able to quantify the water savings and understanding the return on investment relative to the rebates, the on-bill cost savings that the customer realizes, what was striking is those customers that do convert more than 20% of the area, the savings are 48% on their water bill. That's significant. That's huge. So then, you know, is there an opportunity to work with those that make that level of investment or are willing to make that kind of level of investment, knowing they're going to realize that type of reduction on their water bill? Is there financing mechanisms we can explore to streamline the removal of non-functional turf? That's where, you know, we wanted to explore further, and that's what we're going to be working on. Is there on-bill financing opportunities or other opportunities for those customers that do realize that type of significant reduction if they were to convert?
Yep.
And Kurt, I don't know if you want to comment further on that.
Yeah, just briefly. Yeah, thanks for your input and insight, Dr. Armstrong. I think as Joe was saying, and I think what you're alluding to is you can think of maybe a tiered rate, something we can discuss and potentially evaluate to get people to move into that greater than 20% share as well. And so that really seems to be the area that you want your customers to, at least those that have non-functional turf and can do that, to be operating in. And so, yeah, I agree that I think this research and with your input and Joe's and the staff, we can evaluate maybe the potential gains of not just offering a uniform price, but provide different types of incentives for a greater share being put in the program. Thanks.
Dr. Slauson.
I guess I would just say, yes, it's great information. We have an interest in providing water, and if there's if it's less expensive providing conserved water than providing water from a new source, I think very good points that Jeff made. The state lowered the evapotranspiration, right?
Yes.
Number, and that increases the cost, essentially, for this water.
Well, it reduces our customers' water budget. So
what?
It reduces our customers' unique water budget.
Right, right.
In terms of calculating it, yeah.
You could put them in a different tier.
If they don't stay within the water budget, yes, absolutely.
Right. So, yeah, incentivizing based on the amount of, you know, turf that they have to remove, because it gets to a point where even if it's very costly, they can't afford to do it, then it's not going to get done. They just try to absorb the higher cost. So I think Jeff has some great ideas.
Thank you, Dr. Slauson. And I think also, I think it was mentioned before, scale is important here, economy of scale. And you can realize significant water savings and significant cost savings on the water bill based on scale. So you know, we're going to look into this further. This is what Dr. Schwabe and the team wanted to provide you today is just kind of where we're at. This has been a great effort, and once again, EMWD is leading the industry looking at this issue. Frankly, this type of analysis, this type of research, hasn't been done before. There's always been speculation as far as what could be the value of the water saved and how does that translate to the customers. But this is first time that we're seeing quantification, data analysis and research that really backs up what is actually going on with the water savings and the on-bill impacts. But we're going to continue. We're going to build on this. As I said, this is foundational. We're going to build on it and see if there's ways to continue to support our communities, continue to support our customers to remove non-functional turf.
I have one other thing. The information, I imagine we've been working with the World Logistics Center on the east side of Marina Valley because they're really going in and they have a very aggressive construction schedule.
Yes.
So I wonder if this information can be shared.
Yeah, I think this we can definitely translate this into key findings or takeaways when we're working with the development community, recognizing that when they do put in drought-tolerant landscaping, here's the long-term benefit to the customer in terms of water savings. So absolutely, we can translate this into takeaways that we can share with our development community and whenever someone wants to work with us on drought-tolerant landscaping and recycled water irrigation, absolutely.
Yeah, so if we can get it before the turf is actually installed.
Yeah.
I did visit one of his projects yesterday. He has a lot of water features. So yeah, maybe that conserves if you recycle that, but maybe better to get him before he's doing all the designs. Yeah. Maybe we're already working on it. Maybe I'm just thinking.
Of no, and yeah, we'll check in with our development services staff who are working hand in hand with World Logistics. Absolutely.
No, I just want to thank Dr. Schwabe. Great information, and appreciate you and your team assisting us with this. As Joe said, we want to be a leader in this area, and I think this certainly helps. So, thank you for joining us. From Spain today, I think you get the award for the furthest guest this morning.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. And I wish you all the best.
Thank you. All right. We will go on to item 7 this morning, which is to receive and file various reports. I will make the motion to do so.
Second.
Director Corona will second it. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Passes 4-0. Director record absent. And do you want to take a 5-minute break?
Yeah.
All right. Director Corona is going to insist we take a 5-minute break.
Second.
Wait, we have to wait for. Is Mr. Milwaukee? Okay. All right, we will reconvene.
Well, I can ask you in the meeting, but it's. Matt does something, does that affect us? Or
we will go to item number 8 this morning, which is our calendar review. Good morning.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. This morning I have a couple of new events for your review and consideration. Mm-hmm. Beginning with Tuesday, December 5th, is the Murrieta and Wildomar Chamber of Commerce 2023 Economic Outlook, which will take place in Wildomar. Then it's on Wednesday, December 6th, is the City of Hemet Christmas Social. Wednesday, December 13th, is the Canyon Lake City Council Reorganization Event. Friday, December 15th, is the Riverside County Water Task Force Annual Year-End Forum 2023. And the last event here is Friday, January 26th, is the Moreno Valley Chamber of Commerce 2024 Installation and Citizen of the Year Awards Banquet, which will be taking place in Riverside. Details regarding these events can be found within your packet. Turning to page 2 is the current listing of the board members' master calendar for the next 2 weeks. Please take a moment to review. Let me know if you have any updates or changes. Top of page 3 is the list of upcoming events with participants, beginning with Tuesday, November 28th through Thursday, November 30th, is the Association of California Water Agencies AQUA Fall Conference. Monday, December 4th, is the Office of Senator Ochoa Box Holiday Open House. And Wednesday, December 6th, is the EMWD Employee Appreciation Lunch. Following is the board and committee meetings, which are all on schedule. And page 4 is the schedule for the joint interagency meetings. I do want to point out that the December 5th joint meeting with Rancho has been canceled, as well as the December 13th Elsinore Valley has been canceled. There is one board member who will be out of the office beginning Monday, December 25th through Sunday, December 31st. And lastly is the district holiday schedule. EMWD offices will be closed on the following dates: November 23rd and 24th, which is Thanksgiving, December 25th, Christmas Day, January 1st, New Year's Day, and January 15th in observance of Martin Luther King Day. Are there any questions or comments regarding the calendar review?
Director Lawson had one.
Sure. I will be attending the Water Task Force.
Great. I will put you down and put that on your calendar.
Okay.
Thank you.
And of course, the Chamber, Marina Valley Chamber Dinner.
Okay,
and,
great.
And I'd like to attend Aqua this year.
Like to attend
Aqua? If it's not too late.
Let me look into it, and I'll
I know it might be late.
I'll keep you posted for sure, yeah.
I bet we could find him an attendance spot.
I have a question.
Yes.
Does anybody know what the Canyon Lake City Council reorganization
is? So what that entails is that they select the new mayor. Yes.
Okay.
You're welcome. Yes.
Thing. I won't need a hotel though.
You don't need Aqua. A hotel. You just want to go to the conference for Aqua.
It's 60 minutes away.
Okay.
He's going to build a little shack on the golf course just outside.
Perfect. Okay.
All right.
Camp out.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for that. Always appreciated. We will go on to directors' attendance reports, and we will start with Director Armstrong.
Start with the Met. Updates. Yesterday, the Met Board approved, this is sort of the highlights, the interesting part. They did approve a study to look at brackish groundwater desalination as well as ocean desal. And the ocean desal part is really not only looking at some of the previous studies that have already been done, but trying to look at some new technologies out there as well as incorporating the state siting study on ocean desal to kind of make it more comprehensive and inform the Camp for Water process. So that was, as you would expect, some opposition to that, but really overall, really broad support by the board for that yesterday. Yesterday, we received at Met a $38 million grant for perfect timing for non-functional turf replacement and device replacement, et cetera, from DWR, and the executive director, Carla Nemeth, came and presented the check, and then gave a pretty good update, you know, on things happening with DWR, and just a couple of things from that. One, she said that in their forecasting, you know, they know that they need to adapt to a hotter, drier California and have a strategy for that. And felt like the last few years was a real wake-up call to action. But some of their projections include they believe that surface water storage in California by 2040 will just be 10% less than what we see it today just because of those reasons. So that was a good update. And I think that was it, the highlights for Metropolitan. We did have the... The Water Resiliency Group meeting, that was the four agencies getting together. And to me, the highlight of that was that we agreed in terms of our investigation of the three different alternatives we're looking at, that we would move forward with looking at how could you potentially convey desal water to this region if there was a desal project that we were leading on. And so that's looking at along Camp Pendleton. I don't know that we got all the way up to San Onofre or not, but somewhere in there to look at what would it cost to convey water, which I think all of this ties in really good to what Kurt Swabe just shared with us, because it gives us things to compare, you know, how to invest our money. So that was a highlight from that. I attended the Colorado River Quantification Settlement Agreement 20th anniversary celebration that the San Diego County Water Authority hosted, but it was attended by the Water Authority board members and member agencies, as well as IID, Metropolitan, Coachella Valley. So it was really well attended, and it was a lot of positive comments about wanting to really everybody work together going forward, and you heard that from every party there. So thought it was a really good event. It was really well done, but really a positive event. And Joint Inland Caucus, Orange County Caucus, we reviewed the agenda before the Met meeting, but we also, Joe presented information to that caucus on some of the key things happening at Met right now and some of our thoughts and input to get some dialogue and some discussion and really just see how we align on things. And so I missed that part, but I think that was probably the most important part of the meeting, and I hear it went really well. So those are my updates.
Director Corona.
Okay, I attended the Phil Williams dedication ceremony, a very nice ceremony. Great for Phil and Phil's family. The Rancho California Water District board meeting, another meeting with no action items. I gave a short report on the Fallbrook Rainbow vote. And the meetings in Washington, of course, I think it turned out really well. Eastern is very well thought of in Washington circles, and we had nothing but really good compliments and how well we work. Joe and Jolene did a fabulous job, and it was a whirlwind trip, but we need to continue doing this more and more, because I think our reputation is great over there, and can only get better. So that's all I have.
All right. Thank you for that. I, too, attended the Phil Williams Administration Building dedication. Again, Phil was just a great leader at Elsinore, who kind of kept that agency moving in the right direction and is obviously sorely missed. Business outreach lunch, the second one I attended here, again, great job. I'm glad we're back to doing it. It is so good to see the people that do business with Eastern or want to do business with Eastern learn about Eastern and connect with the people here. So I'm real pleased that we do that. My normal update with the general manager, always good. The water resiliency group, obviously, I'll echo what Director Armstrong said. We're moving in the right direction, I think. The purpose of that group was to find new water resources for Southwest Riverside County. And I look forward to finding more things we can do for Southwest Riverside County. Along those lines, I think at some point we need to formalize this group with the JPA, and so that we know who the participants of the group are. So we'll look forward to doing that. I suggested that at the meeting. Winchester Mac, I did not have the opportunity to attend this month. I missed WRCOG. I apologize for that. So WRCOG, we voted on who the speaker for the annual dinner is, and it is going to be Sean McVay, the coach of Los Angeles Rams. So that is the dinner speaker coming up in June. And then, as Director Corona and Joe indicated, we were back in D.C. the last couple of days again. Just, I cannot say it. I know how hard it is to set up all those meetings and get everything coordinated. So between our federal lobbying partner, Vance Goyen Associates, Jolene Walsh, and the whole team at the Government Affairs, I am so thankful that the job they do, putting together the briefing packets that we hand out, individualizing those per congressional office, I none of that is easy, and I really, really appreciate the work. Because I think it when we left a couple of those meetings, people were like, you guys really do great presentations. And I know they see hundreds of people a week, and the fact that we stand out because we do such a superior job at it, I think pays off when we see the amount of federal and state funds that come back our way. So I just want to compliment Julie and the entire team. And I will tell you, Joe does such a fantastic job of presenting the Eastern story to all these folks. I just can't thank you enough for doing that. It's a lot of work.
Appreciate it.
So with that, Director, you have nothing? Director Record's not here. Didn't want to make sure I missed you. I didn't see you. So we'll move on to director's comments, future agenda items. Anybody have anything for that? None there. And I guess, Mr. Legal Counsel, we have a need for closed session. Is that correct?
Yes, we do, Mr. Chair, pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.91, item of potential litigation.
So why don't we change over to closed session, and we have a person who's phoning in. Is that my understanding?
He is unavailable at this time, so we're going to proceed without
him. President Polly, we do have one member of our team, Jolene, will be calling in as well.
Okay, all right, perfect. Okay, we will switch over to closed session. Okay, we are back in open session. I'm going to ask our legal counsel to report out of the closed session item.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The board met pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9 to discuss one item of potential litigation. A discussion was had by the board, and instruction was given to staff and to general counsel. That concludes my closed session report.
Very good. With that, we stand adjourned until Wednesday, December 6th at 9 a.m. Thank you.
Thank you.